Thank you. I want to welcome you all today. This is a wonderful tribute to have all of you here for our colleague, Gerald Haney. I want to thank you all for attending our Gerald Haney Memorial. We appreciate the presence of the Haney family. The judges here, I'm going to have one judge kind of be recognized for everybody, but we have judges from the district court, the magistrate courts, the magistrate and the bankruptcy judges. But Chief Judge Davis from Minneapolis, would you please stand and be recognized for all of our guest judges? Thank you. We obviously have staff from the circuit and the district courts, the lawyers, some former law clerks, and other friends of Gerald Haney. I would like to begin with reading just a few comments from a card. Mrs. Haney, Eleanor Haney, was not able to attend, and I just read you a couple sentences from the note she sent. I am sorry I cannot attend the special session of judges to honor Gerald. My son William Bill Haney will take my place. Thank you for all the judges have done. Memorials, flowers, and so many came. Sincerely, Eleanor. President Lyndon Baines Johnson appointed Gerald William Haney to the United States Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit. Judge Haney was confirmed by the United States Senate on October 20, 1966, received his commission on November 3, 1966, and began serving in December. On December 31, 1988, Judge Haney assumed senior status, reducing his caseload but still continuing to serve on the court. In August 2006, after nearly 40 years of service to our court and a lifetime of service to our nation, Judge Haney retired. For many years, Judge Haney served on our court with two fellow President Johnson appointees, Judge Myron Bright, who you will hear from in a few moments, and the late Judge Donald P. Lay, with whom I had the privilege of serving as a law clerk from 1972 to 1973. And I believe his wife, Miriam, is here in the audience. Miriam, it's good to see you. It was during this time that I first got to know Judge Haney. As law clerks, we admired Judge Haney for his keen mind, his thorough analysis of the case record and the law, and his devotion to justice. It then was my great pleasure to serve on the court with Judge Haney from the time of my appointment until his retirement. After admiring Judge Haney when I was a law clerk 30 years before, I rekindled that admiration when we served together as Eighth Circuit colleagues for 5 years. Judge Haney's passion for justice had not diminished, nor had my respect diminished for this military and judicial hero. One of my most cherished memories on this court was a dinner with Judge Haney and Judge Theodore McMillian. These two giants of the law recounted stories of their youth. Judge Haney shared some of his adventures as a ranger during World War II, and we listeners absorbed some remarkable and real American history. It seems like only yesterday when we joined together to celebrate the renaming of the federal courthouse in Duluth, the Gerald W. Haney Federal Building, the United States Courthouse and Customs House. Today also is an opportunity to say once again, on behalf of this court and our nation, thank you, Jerry. It's my pleasure to introduce our outstanding speakers today. Our first speaker is Judge James B. Loken of Minneapolis. Judge Loken joined the Eighth Circuit Court in 1990 and took the seat vacated by Judge Haney. From 2003 to 2010, Judge Loken served as Chief Judge of the Eighth Circuit. Judge Loken.
Thank you, Chief. Good afternoon, and thank you all again for coming. 3 years ago, as Chief Judge Riley said, I was pleased to participate as Chief Judge in the ceremony celebrating the renaming of the Duluth Courthouse for our good friend and esteemed colleague, Judge Gerald W. Haney. Today we gather again to honor Judge Haney on a much sadder occasion. Before retiring at the end of August 2006, Judge Haney served our court and the people of the Eighth Circuit for nearly 40 years. I was greatly honored to be appointed by President George Herbert Walker Bush in 1990 to take Judge Haney's seat as an active Eighth Circuit judge. Now, I have no doubt that Judge Haney hoped a Democrat would be elected as president in 1988 to nominate his successor. But that never affected the collegial and supportive way he treated me as a new circuit judge from Minnesota. As you heard, after taking senior status, Judge Haney continued to hear cases on a nearly full-time basis. In fact, I might think 105% basis for nearly 17 years. He retired in the fall of or late summer of 2006. His prowess and interest and influence in politics, in Minnesota politics, were legendary. And of course, federal judges can vote, but they can't take part in partisan political activities. So I recall running and getting together and being with Judge Haney in the Twin Cities in the fall of 2006, an election year. And I sort of, I said, Jerry, rumor has it that you're already out pounding in lawn signs on Duluth, in Duluth. And he looked at me with a smile and a twinkle in his eye, and he said, oh, no, I'm too old for that. But I was driving the car. When he retired, Judge Haney was quoted as saying that a judge's life experiences matter when you get a hard case, a tough case that people can reasonably disagree on. It comes down to really what you think is best for our country in the long run. And I entirely agree with that, as I'm sure all my colleagues do. Others will talk today about Judge Haney's many significant civil rights decisions. His life experiences also included, of course, growing up in a rural farm community during the Great Depression. And I recall two tough cases from my days as a practicing attorney in which Judge Haney was the author judge for the Eighth Circuit panel. In each case, my firm's clients were creditors of bankrupt farmers. And this was the time of acute financial difficulties in the 1980s for the nation's farm economy. In each case, Judge Haney authored a thorough opinion for a divided panel that, in my view, creatively tweaked federal statutes to afford those farmers additional protections from our clients' foreclosures. His readings of those statutes ultimately did not prevail, but his efforts taught me a great deal about the art of judging. Given our different life experiences, it was inevitable that Judge Haney and I would occasionally disagree on those hard cases when I came on the court. But we disagreed much less often than people who are not federal judges might expect. One reason was that when we did tentatively disagree, Judge Haney was always willing to work hard to resolve those differences that could be resolved and to put aside any disagreements that weren't essential to deciding the case. He was so well prepared, so creative, and so willing to listen to opposing views that he made all of us work harder to reach the right result, the fair result, in every case. Hard work, a keen mind, respect for the rule of law, firm principles, and a willingness to listen to others and compromise reasonably. These are the qualities of a great judge. Gerald Haney had all those qualities in abundance, plus personal warmth and friendliness that made him a pleasure to work with. His life was truly a life of public service well lived, and I'm grateful for the 15 years that I was privileged to serve with and learn from this distinguished jurist.
Thank you, Judge Logan. And now I have the privilege of introducing my court colleague, and although he needs little introduction, Judge Myron Bright of Fargo, North Dakota. Judge Bright joined the Eighth Circuit Court in 1968. Last year, Judge Bright became the longest-serving working judge on the Eighth Circuit, having heard over 6,000 cases in more than 41 years of service. Judge Bright was a longtime colleague and a close friend of Judge Haney. Judge Bright?
Thank you, Chief. Good afternoon, everybody. After 42 years on this court, I want to tell you, I'm still glad to be here. In 1863, President Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation attempting to free the slaves. In 1865, the Civil War ended, and with it, forever ended slavery in this country. But the former slaves and their descendants obtained their freedom, but remained subject to great oppression and prejudice, and did not immediately feel the blessings of the good life in America. The same may be said for other persons of color and non-Caucasians in the country. Indeed, 100 years after the end of the Civil War, on March 26, 1965, in Montgomery, Alabama, Dr. Martin Luther King uttered these famous words regarding the existence of great discrimination against persons of color and minority. And I quote, "I know you are asking today, how long will it take? How long? Not long, because no lie can live forever. How long? Not long, because you shall reap what you sow. How long? Not long, because the arc of moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice." Under the leadership of President Lyndon Baines Johnson, Congress enacted the Civil Rights Acts of 1964, guaranteeing equal rights under the law, regardless of race, religion, gender, and national origin, in almost every areas of our life in these United States, including employment, housing, public accommodations, and public education. But these were empty promises by the legislative and executive branches of government until the courts gave those laws muscle. Between 1966 and 1968, President Lyndon Johnson appointed these three to the United States Court of Appeals: Judge Lay, Judge Haney, and me. Immediately thereafter, under the Civil Rights Act of 1964, school desegregation, as well as other civil rights cases, came before the Eighth Circuit. These judges I mentioned and others were called upon to decide these difficult controversies. Judge Haney played a strong leadership role in the appeals before the Eighth Circuit, determining that civil rights should be and will be strongly enforced. Among his more than 2,000 opinions written for this circuit, Judge Haney will be remembered in his cases and even in his dissents as a strong voice in liberally extending and protecting civil rights for all persons. But in the Eighth Circuit, like every appellate court, it takes at least two judges to tango, if I can use that expression. In addition to the Johnson appointees, other judges marched in the direction of affording equal rights to all in the late 60s and the early 70s. The names of these other judges come to my mind. They weren't appointed, by the way, by Lyndon Johnson. Judge Blackmun, appointed by Judge Eisenhower. Judge Blackmun of Minnesota. Judge Mathis of Missouri, also appointed by President Eisenhower. Judge Ross of Nebraska, appointed by Nixon. And of course, our friend Judge Webster of Missouri, also appointed by President Nixon. And by the way, Bill and I have had a great time reminiscing about those days. And not to be outdone, in another state, Judge Roy Stevenson of Iowa. What has been accomplished? Let me share a few of my recollections. When I came to the court in 1968, African Americans primarily served in menial employment, janitors, doormen, maids, and so forth. And women? Women stayed home for the most part, and their outside employment of equal opportunities were pretty much limited to nursing, secretarial work, and teaching. Women stayed home, as I said, for the most part. African Americans, other minorities, and women played a very limited role in the workplace and in our society. Segregation of our black citizens was the rule in many parts of the country and not the exception. And incidentally, I remember St. Louis well when I got there. It was, for the most part, a segregated city, segregated schools, and very few women of African Americans, or very few men, too, in public life. I look around. I see many minority and women, lawyers, professors, federal judges in our audience. I recall that in 1968, we had one staff law clerk, a woman who couldn't get a job in St. Louis or anywhere else after law school. I could go on and on. Yes, we've come a long way. We have an African-American president in this country and three women as Supreme Court justices. But there's still a long road ahead. Let me comment a bit. Gerald Haney served his country well with great heroism in World War II, then later as a lawyer, a concerned citizen, and finally a circuit judge, as you've heard, for almost 40 years. He wrote leading cases in every area of the law, but those in constitutional law, criminal law, habeas corpus, civil rights, equal employment, labor law, Social Security benefits, and school desegregation have made a change in our lives and in our society. Dean E. Thomas Sullivan wrote the following in the Minnesota University Law School Law Review as a tribute to Judge Haney, which celebrated the first 30 years of his judicial service. And I'd like to quote it in part. It really says it all. Gerald Haney has led a life of service. He has served his community and his country and our future through his vision for education that creates opportunity for and develops the potential of all of our American children. It is through that dedication that Judge Haney's philosophy of life and the law will serve for generations to come, generations which will read Judge Haney's jurisprudence for its clear message on promoting liberty and protecting individual freedoms against the tyranny of the more powerful and ensuring equal opportunity for all persons in education, in the workplace, and in living accommodations, and on pursuing the public good through civic responsibility. He has left us with an uncommon legacy. Jerry Haney was, if I can say so, one of the last of the early Mohicans who led the struggle in the courts for equal rights. What was it like to be Gerald's friend and his colleague for so many significant cases and for so many years? Perhaps these two vignettes will put him in a proper perspective. In September 1968, when I first became a judge, I had dinner with Jerry here in St. Louis. And here's what he said to me. Myron, I do not believe that this country can exist in domestic peace as a segregated society as we now are. All men and women, regardless of race, color, or creed, must and should be treated equally under the protection of equal protection of the law. And Gerald devoted his life to that goal. I give you as another vignette that exemplifies his life and his excellence, and it is that as a fisherman seeking to catch the elusive walleye pike in the Minnesota lakes. Once when I was fishing with Gerald and not doing as well as he, I asked it, "Jerry, how come you catch the walleye pike and I can't do it?" And he answered this way, "Myron, when the fish are not biting, I stand up in the boat and I yell, 'I believe, I believe.' Yes, and then I catch fish." Yes, and in his life, Gerald said, "I believe." And that belief led to action and great accomplishment. As one old judge and one old soldier to another, I salute you, Jerry. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Bright. Judge Diana E. Murphy, also from Minneapolis, Minnesota, became a member of the Eighth Circuit in 1994. She is our first and only woman to serve as an Eighth Circuit judge. From 1999 to 2004, Judge Murphy chaired the United States Sentencing Commission. And with that, Judge Murphy.
Thank you, Chief Judge Riley. Jerry Haney was a man of many parts. First of all, he was a family man and a man of faith, committed to his church's longstanding concern for the common good. He was a wise and principled man, never ego-driven. He was also a brave man who made it up to the German gun emplacements which dominated the Normandy beaches and later lived through the fiercest fighting in the big German counteroffensive. Jerry found his true profession at the University of Minnesota Law School, where he began a lifelong relationship with that university. He served on its Board of Regents before going on the bench, and throughout his life, he found ways to help it grow and flourish, particularly at its Duluth campus. At the law school, Jerry met Orville Freeman, who would go on to be governor of Minnesota and Secretary of Agriculture. It was he who introduced Jerry to Hubert Humphrey. The three young men had much to talk about, for they were all interested in public policy. They had a special affinity for it, and two of the three were later elected to high office. Just a few weeks ago, I happened to meet Orville's wife, Jane Freeman. She knew them all well in those early years. She told me that of the three men, it was Jerry who best understood politics. Yet he never wanted to run for office. He always wanted to be a judge, and he remained a practicing lawyer until he became President Johnson's second appointment to our court. Jerry had a brilliant legal mind. He was also willing to work his way through voluminous records to search out key facts and through decades of court decisions to find the most applicable law. Sometimes there was no real precedent for the difficult cases the court faced. There were no routine cases for Jerry Haney, for in each there was always his search for justice. He was sensitive to the real-life consequences of judicial decisions. He was an active judge at oral argument, relishing the opportunity to get to the heart of the matter. He would often look a fellow judge in the eye while asking counsel a question to make sure his point was getting across to his colleagues. Jerry was also innovative in fashioning potential solutions to the problems raised. He truly cared about justice and believed that it was best served by all, allowing all voices to be heard. Jerry had friends everywhere. including at my law firm, where there were a number of publicly minded lawyers of differing political persuasions. He was an object of great respect there. His own practice was based in Duluth, but he maintained ties across the state and the nation in the service of his clients. One of his closest relationships over the years was with another member of the Minnesota Bar, Walter F. Mondale. Jerry was a positive force wherever his interest took him. He was a lifelong friend and mentor to his law clerks, and even had occasion to encourage me too along the way. Not only was he a shrewd observer of the political process, he was a sage advisor about any of the paths a lawyer might want to take in life. Normally reticent about himself, Jerry was disarmingly candid if questioned about some aspect of his life. It was only after seeing the film seeing Private Ryan that I came to learn firsthand about some of his personal experiences during the war. That film powerfully portrayed the withering fire faced by the Allied forces at Normandy. The landing did not go as planned, and Jerry had to assume leadership of his unit after the captain was killed before he could even get out of the boat. Somehow, Jerry fought his way to the top of the hill and helped take over the German positions. He told me that that was the only day of the war he was not afraid, the only day he had not feared for his life. Only later that night, after he was ordered to go back down to the beach to collect abandoned weapons, did he realize how many people had been killed. The dead were everywhere. Much later, after the German surrender, and after the Americans began to organize a government for their occupation zone in southern Germany, Jerry was asked to draw up a new labor code for the people. The opportunity to write a new legal code on a subject so close to his heart was extraordinary. Yet he turned it down. At that point, he explained, he just wanted to get home to Eleanor. And she and their family remained closest to his heart for the rest of his life.
Thank you, Judge Murphy. Robert Hennessy is a member of the Lindquist and Venom law firm in Minneapolis. More importantly for today, Mr. Hennessy is a former law clerk for Judge Haney, serving from 1968 to 1969. He will be representing the law clerks. Mr. Hennessy.
Please the court and all the judges. It's my distinct honor to speak on behalf of Judge Haney's law clerks. Judge Haney and Joe Dixon and I were trying to come up with the exact number, but it was over 70 law clerks he had in his years on the bench. And every time Congress would make provision for a new law clerk, Jerry would fill it, because Jerry was a full employment Democrat. I would like to take the privilege of introducing a couple people. There are so many distinguished people here that I'm treading on thin ice, but I would like to introduce, and she's already been mentioned, Jane Freeman, who was, her and Governor Freeman were some of the longest friends that the judge had. And I would just like to introduce her. She's here with us today. Also, there's one other person, and we'll get to this probably in greater detail in another part of the presentation. But the judge wrote a book, and I saw Judge Webster walk in with it, and he's got it in his hand. And it's near and dear to his heart because it's about his town, St. Louis. And that book was called The Unending Struggle. And Judge Haney did that in conjunction with a co-author, Susan Yucatel. Dr. Yucatel is with us today. I'm very happy she came up for this event, and I'd like to introduce her. Before I speak on behalf of the law clerks, I would like to introduce the Haney children who are here today. Carol Jean, is here. And Judge Haney's son, Bill, is here. Bill is going to make a presentation on behalf of the family. There are many other Haney family members here, but I would just have you all acknowledge them in their presence. Bill?
Thanks, Bob. Wanted to first extend my mother's greetings to everybody, and she was not able to be here today, as has been previously mentioned. And Judge Murphy, I want you to know that I know about that eye of my father's when we debate things, and Judge Loken, I think he cut you a lot more slack than he cut me when we used to debate things. So, out of all the things and the times I spent with my dad and things that we did together, it was absolutely always clear to me that his bottom line was people, whether it was politics or business or being a judge or practicing law or being my dad or just a human being, everything, it was all about the people. And that base lesson is with me and will be with me for the rest of my life. And everybody's got to have a quote, right? And I have a quote that I wanted to share with everybody, and it's not one of my dad's, but Terry had, my wife had given me some CDs that were lectures on civil rights or Civil Liberties, Bill of Rights, and the history of the Supreme Court. And there was one that I ran across on those CDs that just after my father had died, and I was driving all around the state for work, and I had to pull over and listen to it several times because I thought, wow, that just really sounds like Dad. And it's from Frank Murphy, who was appointed to the United States Supreme Court by FDR in 1940 and served until I was born in 1949. But Judge Murphy had said that only by zealously guarding the rights of the most humble, the most unorthodox, and the most despised among us can freedom flourish and endure in our land. And I thought that really very well encapsulated my father's philosophy as well. So thank you all for coming, and thanks to the court for having this day.
Thank you, Bill. On behalf of the law clerks, I would like to have a few remarks, and I think it is clear we all had different experiences. We served at different times over that 40 years, but in many regards, we had a thread that ran through all those experiences, and the judge made sure that we stayed together. Because every Christmas, we'd meet at the Lexington, and we'd have our lunch. And then he'd go around and say, what are you doing now? What are you doing now? And he would pull out the information that he believed that we were interested in, and then he, quite frankly, would give his opinion on it. The judge grew up in Goodyear, Minnesota. And to flesh that out more, he grew up during the Depression. And what he said influenced him the most during that time. The judge's mother had died when he was a child, and his father had a meat market and was a farmer in Goodyear. And the judge used to say, when you asked him what influenced his approach to life, and he said it was a compassionate father. He said he had a father who tended to the needs of the people in Goodyear. And he used to say that often, and he said it publicly when he was interviewed by NPR or MPR recently, or in the early 2004 or 2006 when he retired. He then went on to St. Thomas College during the Depression, and he also used to talk about the people who aided him in making his tuition payments, scholarships that he got from the Knights of Columbus, and help from his father. After that, he went on to the University of Minnesota, and there he met, as has already been mentioned, some very influential people in his life. He met Orville Freeman, Jane Freeman, he met Hubert Humphrey. All these people were there when Judge Haney was in law school, and they did influence his life. That was the one thing all the law clerks found out, is all these wonderful friends that Judge Haney had and how they all influenced each other, but with respect to Judge Haney, how they influenced him. With regard, and this is a true story, and Jane can correct me if I'm wrong, but on Pearl Harbor Day, Orville Freeman, Jane Freeman, Mrs. Haney, and Jerry Haney were all together, and they all got the news regarding Pearl Harbor at the same time. The next day, Orville Freeman, Jerry Haney, and I think former Anoka County Attorney Bob Johnson all went to join the Marines. Jerry Haney was colorblind, and he could not pass the physical. But that didn't deter him from service. And in that service, a year later, he joined the U.S. Rangers. And it was during that time, when he served with the Rangers, that he received a Silver Star for his, quote, undaunted bravery and leadership on D-Day. He received the Bronze Star. He received 5 battle stars, all of which happened from 1944 through the time when peace was declared in 1945. Judge Haney then came back and married Eleanor Haney, and they moved to Duluth. At that time, he became very active in civic organizations. And I'm just, you're just the Port Authority. He collaborated on the State Redevelopment Act. He was a co-founder of the Northeast Minnesota Development Association. He stumped the state for the Taconite Amendment. And then something that was near and dear to his heart, and that was a regent from the 8th District for the University of Minnesota. And as a regent, he was incredibly active in promoting the interest of the University of Minnesota at Duluth. There is a famous story that Vice President Mondale tells about when it was announced that Gerald Haney was going to be a regent at the University of Minnesota. Someone confronted him and said, he can't be a regent. He'll move the university from Minneapolis-St. Paul to Duluth. And so Vice President Mondale said to Haney when he next saw him, here's what he said. He says, well, that's not true. He says, I'll only move it piece by piece. And, sirs, I know when we had the service for Judge Haney in Duluth, Chancellor Martin spoke, and he was a force in promoting the interests of the university at Duluth. As a political leader, Judge Haney had some significant friends. He not only Vice President Humphrey and Governor Freeman and Walter Mondale, he was the campaign manager for Eugene McCarthy in 1958. And Eugene McCarthy became the senator from the university, or from the Minnesota at that time. In addition, he had as his close friends Don and Arvon Fraser, who he had incredible admiration for their work. All these people were people that the clerks were able to meet and look at as examples of people who were incredibly committed to involvement in their community. Every law clerk started with the idea that we're going to learn a lot of law. And you do learn a lot of law, especially when you have a judge who he really did work incredibly hard on his opinions. He would stay up at night writing the opinions, and then he would go over them again, and he made a conscious effort to make sure that they were, all the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed. But one thing that was, we didn't expect, but we all got, and that was this sense of a commitment to the community. When I started clerking for Judge Haney, there was an organization called Townview, and it was 19 women and a judge and an idea, and that was to rebuild the hillside in Duluth. And they started out, and they had, over time, renovated and provided low-income and modest housing for units all over the hillside. And if you go up there today, you can still see all of those properties that they renovated. And this was all an idea that the judge had when after he went on the bench and he wanted to stay active in the community of Duluth. Later on, when this organization was named by President Ford as the Volunteer Organization of the Year in 1974, the judge was interviewed about it. And I'm going to read it to you. And someone said, why all the women? And this is what Judge Haney said. Because Haney thought that they had necessary strengths and time. Besides, this is no ordinary group of women, he explains. They have been volunteering for one cause or another for 20 years. They have as much competence as any group of men in town. And he was proud of that organization, as he was proud of all of his law clerks when they came to him and said not what big cases they were handling, but what they had done in the community in the past year. Thank you for the time, and I appreciate all of the attendance of the law clerks that were here, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak on their behalf.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Next, Professor Robert A. Stein now teaches at the University of Minnesota Law School, where he was dean from 1979 to 1994. From 1994 to 2006, Professor was the Executive Director and Chief Operating Officer of the American Bar Association. Professor Stein.
Chief Judge Riley, members of the court, judges of all courts present, Judge Webster, family and friends of Judge Haney, may it please the court. We remember today and celebrate the life of one of the giants of the law, and a giant on this court. As you've heard, Judge Gerald Haney served on this court in active status and as a senior judge for a remarkable 40 years, from 1966 to 2006. And his dedication to the administration of justice and his commitment to safeguarding the civil liberties afforded all of us by the Constitution will be indelibly etched in the history of this court for all time. Judge Haney had a passion for ensuring that our constitutional rights are protected, and especially for those less fortunate in our society who might have difficulty asserting them on their own behalf. Judge Haney, I know because he spoke about it often, took special pride in his 18 years of judicial oversight of the integration of public schools in St. Louis, writing more than two dozen opinions outlining strategies to provide equal protection to the school children of St. Louis. And I won't say much more about that because I suspect Judge Webster may have some words about it, but I will say that some studies have shown that students having the opportunity to participate in special programs that Judge Haney approved were 2 to 4 times more likely to graduate from high school than students who didn't have that opportunity. And these programs literally changed the lives of thousands of fortunate students for the better. As you've heard, Judge Haney was also a giant among the many distinguished graduates of the University of Minnesota Law School. Following his graduation in 1941 and throughout his entire life, he continued to have a great interest in and love for his law school and indeed the entire University of Minnesota. You've heard about the fact that he served on the Board of Regents of the University of Minnesota, and it was only because he accepted an appointment to this court that he stepped down from the board earlier than he otherwise might have. And developments at his law school and in the greater university were of continuing and enormous interest to him. I was privileged to be a member of the University of Minnesota Law School faculty for most of Judge Haney's time on the court and served, as you've heard, as dean of the school for 15 of those years. Telephone calls and conversations with Judge Haney were a frequent and pleasurable occurrence during all of those years. It was a joy to receive a call from Judge Haney and hear his voice and hear his questions about the university, his views on issues that had come up, and his advice on a course of action that should be pursued. When he called about the law school, he often expressed excitement with new faculty that were appointed, new scholarship that he was familiar with. He inquired about the diversity enrollment in the student body and expressed satisfaction when improvements were made. And he would call to express a pleasure with a recent graduate who was now one of the clerks that was clerking for him, such as Bob Hennessy has just described. And of course, Judge Haney had a special love for the Duluth campus of the university, and he was one of the enormous advocates and supporters of that campus. Without question, the quality of that fine campus is due in no small part to Judge Haney's active involvement on its behalf. And I wanted to note Judge Haney's love for the work of this court in describing his many passions. One of my treasured memories of Judge Haney is some time that my wife Sandy and I spent with Judge Haney and Eleanor and with Judge Donald Lay and Miriam in Florida about 5 or 6 years ago, not too long before Judge Haney retired from the court. We were all spending a few days in the Florida sun as a respite from the winter winds, and we discovered that we were all in the same area of that state, staying in close proximity to one another, and that provided an opportunity for us to get together for an evening of conversation and friendship. And Judge Bright, I think that you were there about the same time but had to leave before we were able to have dinner. But we planned a dinner one night and found we had so much fun talking and so much to talk about that we scheduled another dinner later in the week to talk some more. And the conversations were wide-ranging over several hours and included issues of current administration of justice as well as reminiscences about the past. And one of the subjects we talked about was the fact that Judge Haney had never had the opportunity to serve as chief judge of this court, notwithstanding his many years of distinguished service on the court. Judge Donald Leahy and Judge Haney were both appointed to the court in 1966, with Judge Leahy being appointed just a short while before Judge Haney. And after Judge Leahy became chief judge of the court, at that point the rules were somewhat different, and so he continued to serve until the conclusion, until he took senior status. But as we talked about that, Judge Haney expressed no disappointment in that fact and talked only about his love for this court, his love for the work that he'd been able to accomplish, and his great satisfaction as he reflected back on his years of service. It was a special and wonderful opportunity to participate in those conversations about this great court with two of the giants of the court and evenings that I will never forget. Now, Chief Judge Riley indicated that I spent a number of years at the American Bar Association. Those of you who are members may know the logo of the American Bar Association includes the words, "Defending Liberty, Pursuing Justice." Defending Liberty and Pursuing Justice. Judge Haney personified those words. The bell of justice rings a little more clearly in the states of the Eighth Circuit as a result of Judge Haney's 40 years of distinguished service on this court. His life and his service have enriched us all.
Thank you, Professor Stein. Next, we're going to have Robert Hennessy return up here, and Mr. Hennessy will present several tributes to Judge Haney.
When Judge Haney died, Mrs. Haney received literally hundreds of letters of condolences and tributes to Judge Haney. I've gone through and tried to pick out a few which I think deal with Judge Haney's service to this country. The first was sent by President Barack Obama at the time of Judge Haney's death to the friends and family of the Honorable Gerald W. Haney. Michelle and I were so saddened to hear about the passing of Judge Haney. Please accept our deepest sympathies as you mourn his loss and celebrate his extraordinary life. Judge Haney leaves a world better by his service in the United States Armed Forces, and our nation is forever grateful for his sacrifice. His commitment to our country continued through his many decades as a federal judge, and his legacy as a champion of equal justice under the law will live in the hearts of all those he touched. May you find solace in your cherished memories of Judge Haney, and may you always bring you great joy and pride. Another letter that was sent for this event was from James Oberstar, who is the congressman in the 8th District. Dear friends, I regret that I cannot be with you today to join in remembering Judge Haney. Gerald's long list of accomplishments as a soldier, judge, and citizen is remarkable. His bravery on the battlefield was matched by his tenacious pursuit of justice in the courtroom, where many of his decisions ensured that the American dream was in reach for all of our citizens. I will miss Judge Haney perhaps more for the friendship and guidance he has given me. Gerald was a friend and inspiration to all who knew him. His passing is a loss to all of us, but we must remember how fortunate we are to live with his legacy. Though I cannot be with you to celebrate and remember all that Judge Haney did for greater good, I join you in honoring him today. Best wishes, James Oberstar. There is another letter, and it's longer, and I will not read it in its total, but it comes from an individual who read all the civil rights cases. He was the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights in the Clinton administration. His name was William Lamb Lee, and he wrote the following to Mrs. Haney. Dear Mrs. Haney, I and others in the civil rights community were saddened by the death last week of Judge Gerald Haney. I wish to express my condolences and pay a tribute to his memory. He was a great man who inspired many others. I was privileged to serve as the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights in the United States Department of Justice in the President Clinton's administration for 3 years and a lawyer for the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund for 17 years. At both institutions, Judge Haney was celebrated as a giant of the law when our federal courts led the national effort to remove legal barriers to racial justice. At both the Justice Department and the Legal Defense Fund, we represented those whose humanity and dignity Judge Haney's rulings vindicated in case after case, the name of equal justice, due process, and rule of law. We are grateful that he served the nation so well. Judge Haney's rulings in the civil rights and civil liberties cases stand as a monument to a life lived amid the turmoil and controversy of our nation's history. He was a life thoroughly lived, mindful as few have been of the plight of the poor, minorities, and those on the margins of society. He was committed to justice without fear or favor. And then it goes on. But I always viewed this letter as someone who knew what the courts had done for civil rights and knew the role Jerry Haney played in it. And it is one that Mrs. Haney treasures among all the others that she received. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Fanning. Daniel Fanning is the Deputy State Director for United States Senator Al Franken of Minnesota. Sir Fanning, we are delighted you could join us.
Thank you, Chief Justice, and thank you all. It's an honor to be here both on behalf of Senator Franken as also on behalf of myself, who had the honor of meeting and working with Judge Haney a number of times. Before I just briefly mention my encounters with the judge myself, I wanted to read just an excerpt in the interest of saving time of something that Senator Franken wanted to do personally when he heard about the passing of Gerald Haney. He knew that his was a legacy that would live on, as we've all demonstrated today, as we all know it will, but he wanted to make sure that he had a congressional statement on his life, which will forever be a living document in the United States Congress. So on the Senator's behalf, I'm just going to read a couple of brief excerpts from that. Mr. President, today I note with sorrow the passing of one of America's greatest jurists, Judge Gerald W. Haney. Judge Haney served with distinction and honor for 40 years on the United States Court of Appeals of the Eighth Circuit. He played a leading role in enforcing Brown versus Board of Education by desegregating schools, among other places, Kansas City, Omaha, and St. Louis. A giant of the law, Gerald Haney will be remembered as not only a brilliant jurist, but a judge who helped make the promise of equality under the law a reality for many Americans. During World War II, Judge Haney served with distinction in the Army, landing on Omaha Beach on D-Day and staying in Germany after the war to help reform federal local labor laws. After returning from war, Judge Haney practiced labor law for 20 years. He negotiated the contract that made Duluth Public Schools the first in the state to adopt equal pay for women. Judge Haney's civic accomplishments before joining the Eighth Circuit are a testament to one of Minnesota's most public-spirited sons. He was instrumental in creating Duluth Seaway Port Authority and the local public broadcasting station. He also served as a regent for the University of Minnesota and was a lifelong champion for the University of Minnesota Duluth. As an appellate judge, Judge Haney was devoted to enforcing the Constitution's promise for equal protection and expanding equality to all citizens, regardless of race, sex, religion, age, or disability. For Judge Haney, equality of opportunity was also personal. he hired the Eighth Circuit's first African-American and female law clerks. Judge Haney was a leading jurist on criminal justice issues. His opinions on the Fourth Amendment were exceedingly influential, including an argument in dissent of concerning probable cause for a warrant that was later adopted by the Supreme Court. Judge Haney's scholarship of federal sentencing was an impassioned plea of humanity and decency in sentencing. Judge Haney is survived by Eleanor, his wife of 64 years, his daughter Carol, his son Bill, sister Elizabeth, 6 grandchildren, and 8 great-grandchildren. I offer my deepest sympathies to all those who knew him and loved him. Vice President Mondale said it best when he said that Judge Haney was a great and decent human being, a superb judge, and a really caring human being. Fittingly, the federal courthouse in Duluth, Minnesota is named for Judge Haney. It stands as a lasting monument of the causes of Judge Gerald Haney's life, providing equal justice under the law. I'll do what I very seldom do, which is just speak for myself and not the senator for just a second, and just say I have the honor of actually working in that federal courthouse in Duluth, Minnesota, where we're proud to have an office there. And as a resident of Duluth, as a graduate of the University of Minnesota, Duluth, as a veteran who was an Iraq War of Combat veteran who had the honor of joining Judge Haney at a number of veterans organizations when he was speaking on behalf of veterans' rights, I had it was an absolute honor to meet him and to get to know him just a little bit. And I'll never forget some of the words he said to me. First of all, he'd always comment on how much he liked my Irish name. And then he'd tell me to keep fighting the good fight and stand up for what I believed in because he wanted to see a lot more young people come back from war and do what he did, was to get more involved with politics. So not only were his words always inspire me, and we know when we're talking about inspiration and legacy, we've heard so many great stories here today, there's no question his legacy is going to live on forever. Not only is it in your hearts and in your stories, it's on the official congressional record, but every time I go to my office in Duluth, I pass a huge plaque that says his name, and I'll always remember the way he smiled at me with that Irish smile and told me he liked my name, and I remember what he'll always tell me, which inspires me and inspires a lot of young people, which is always to fight the good fight and stand up for what you believe in. So it's an honor to share that story with you. Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Fanning. It's a very great pleasure to have back one of our Eighth Circuit judges, Judge William Webster. From 1973 to 1978, Judge William H. Webster served as a circuit judge of the Eighth Circuit along with Judge Haney. In 1978, Judge Webster became director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and in 1987, he became the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, the only American to serve in both capacities. Since 1991, Judge Webster practices law in Washington, D.C. office of Milbank, Tweed, Hadley, and McCloy. Judge Webster.
Thank you. Chief Judge Riley, may it please the court, Professor Stein, former law clerks, and friends of Judge Gerald Haney. I am really pleased and honored to be invited to participate in this ceremony and in this remembrance of a remarkable, wonderful man. Only Senior Judge Bright, still serving on the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, at the time that I was there, during the 3 years on the district court and 5 years on the circuit, 8 of the best years of my life, but only Judge Bright is still in there kicking. And I hope you'll stay that way for a long time, Mike. The ranks are thinning of that wonderful group. Names that I serve with, like Johnson, Van Oosterhout, Vogel, Mathis, Blackman, Gibson, Stevenson, Henley, Mahaffey, Ross, and Donald Lay, are but warm rumors now, or warm memories now, of history. And so today we say farewell to a uniquely gifted legal giant, Gerald William Haney, whose over 40 years of active service links the past history of the court with its dynamic present. Much has already been said today about Judge Haney's cases and causes at the bar and the bench, and I will not attempt to repeat much of it. except to say that it was good to hear it said so well. My memory of Judge Haney was one of one who was informed, interested, thoughtful, and caring. In the days when the St. Louis Post-Dispatch produced as many as three editions a day, Jerry read all three of them if he could get his hands on them. He was liberal in his outreach to deal fairly with the less fortunate and passionate in his desire to preserve equal justice for all. I had never heard him raise his voice, but his opinions could be both powerful and fearless. If my own views seemed a bit more conservative than his at times, he never demeaned them. I think of him as a consequentialist, a term you may not have heard often, but has more frequently been attributed to Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. Because of her qualities and questions from the bench and her concern about the fallout effect of the court's decisions in a close case, like her, Jerry Haney really cared. And the caring that I mentioned may best be reflected in a remarkable book that has been referred to already and which I have in my hands and which was a very welcome gift from Jerry. On an evening when I was here as the guest of Judge Murphy at a function of the court and a dinner following it hosted by Judge Lay with all of us reminiscing, I am so pleased to have it. Dr. Susan Uchitel is here, I understand, and I want to tell you how much I enjoyed and continue to enjoy your wonderful book. Unending Struggle, The Long Road to an Equal Education in St. Louis, my hometown, published in 2004. It's a painstaking and extraordinary study of the court's effort to deal with desegregation and integration of the schools in St. Louis. With all its painful history since the Missouri Compromise and in the subsequent mandate of Brown v. Board of Education, with all deliberate speed. The cases started when I was serving as a member of the district court, but did not reach the Eighth Circuit until after I had left the court in 1978. But Judge Haney was there throughout. Historically, Missouri has had a tough time in dealing with this issue, a state which denied educational opportunities to black children, changing from that role in early times to a state offering such education only on a segregated basis. I was a product of that later period through high school, as was my friend Diane Simmons, the daughter of my nanny, who attended the segregated Douglas school system while I attended and enjoyed the advantages of Webster Groves High School. Many years later, when I moved to Washington to head the FBI, Diane was a certified public accountant and wife of the mayor of our city of Washington, Anthony Williams. Others were not so fortunate. In his book, Judge Haney traced the effects of District Judge James Meredith's efforts to deal with the education in a city whose school system was separate from the St. Louis County school system because St. Louis had seceded from the county because the farmers were not paying their taxes, and which was geographically circumscribed by the Mississippi on the one side and the numerous county municipalities on the other, which were not part of the St. Louis school system. St. Louis schools were substantially branches were substantially black, and the county schools were substantially white. Busing did not seem to be an option because the county school districts had not contributed impermissibly to that imbalance. My friend Judge Meredith, whose health substantially broke under the strain, did not believe that he could order the integration of the school, city, and county school systems. The case reached your circuit, the Eighth Circuit, our circuit, in 1980, after appeals from his efforts, earnest but unavailing, where in an opinion of some length and carefully drawn by Chief Judge Donald Lay and with a unanimous court, including Judge Haney, reversed the lower court and ordered more imaginative and assertive efforts to make Brown v. Board of Education a reality in St. Louis. Magnet schools and cross-border busing were key ingredients in that solution. It took over 19 years of this court's supervision to see it come to fruition. This is a remarkable book by a remarkable judge and his colleague, Dr. Uchitel, and I commend it to all of you who have not yet read it. It makes me proud to have served in a court with judges like Judge Haney and those who undertook that 19-year effort. I shall always treasure this book as coming from a man I deeply admired, who took the trouble to inscribe a lovely message to me to commend me on for my love of country and exceptional public service, the qualities that he far more than I embodied in a long and productive life. Truly, in his own determined, steadfast way, he fulfilled the biblical command to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with God. Jerry, we salute you. Godspeed.
Thank you very much, Judge Webster. Please join me in a moment of silence for the Honorable Gerald Haney, a genuine American hero. Thank you. Thank you to Judge Haney. And I want to thank each of you for attending today. I also want to recognize and thank several people for the preparation and organization of this memorial. Millie Adams and the Circuit Executive Staff, Maureen Watts Gornick and the St. Paul Clerk's Office, and Judge Myron Bright, who was the creative and driving force for this memorial. Thank you all. There will be a reception immediately following here in the first floor jury assembly room, and it's sponsored by the Association of the Bar of the United States Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit, which much easier to say the Eighth Circuit Bar. So I thank you again for all that we're coming, and we are now in recess.
Will you carry
yes, I will, of course. Thank you.